Good morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We're podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. And we're at facebook.com/radiocafe. Later on in the show, we're going to be speaking to Denise McCluggage, and she is a very interesting person. She is one of the first women race car drivers ever. She lives here in Santa Fe, and she's going to be talking to us about the Santa Fe Concorso, which is coming up this weekend. And right now, I'd like to welcome Stuart Ashman. He is the Cabinet Secretary for Cultural Affairs for the state of New Mexico. Welcome.
Thank you.
So before we go on talking about Stuart Ashman's work and the Governor's Awards for Excellence in the Arts that's happening this coming weekend, I would like to remind people that we are still in the KSFR Fund Drive. We are going to raise $100,000, and we are way over the halfway point. Not sure exactly what the numbers are at this point, but we are doing okay, and we can still use your help. If you like this show, if you like public radio, we urge you and ask you to call 428-1393 in the 505 area code, 505-428-1393. Make a pledge to KSFR, make a pledge for the Radio Cafe and for the arts in New Mexico, which is what we're talking about here. The Governor's Arts Awards are happening, well, it's this Friday. There's a number of events. There's a gallery opening at the Governor's Gallery at 3:30 on Friday afternoon, and then there's a ceremony at St. Francis Auditorium at 5:15 in the afternoon on Friday. They're both free events, open to the public. And about 10 New Mexicans, or almost New Mexicans, are getting awards this year.
Yes, that's right, Mary Charlotte. 10 awardees. It's really a memorable 37th Governor's Awards. As you know, the Governor's Awards were started in 1974. By Bruce and Alice King, and this is, of course, Governor Richardson's last opportunity to give awards as the governor of the state of New Mexico.
Right.
And it's really a diverse selection of some of the most wonderful artists in the state.
How do you choose them? Are you involved with that yourself?
No, actually, I'm not. What happens is nominations are open to the public. They open in just about right after the award ceremony for the next year, and there's an application process or a nomination process, and it's selected by a committee of the New Mexico Arts Commission, who then turn over their selections to the full commission, and then they vote on it and submit it to the Governor and First Lady for final approval. So that's really how it works.
And so one of them who is getting an award for leadership in the arts is Robert Redford.
That's right. And Mr. Redford, you know, has been coming to New Mexico and has had a residence here for many years. Finally built a house, completed last year. And he and the Department of Cultural Affairs have an agreement to develop an old ranch in northern New Mexico into a film education and storytelling center for Native Americans and Hispanics. You know, this is one of the efforts of the Richardson administration to enhance the film industry, now known in New Mexico or in other parts of the world as Tamalewood.
Right. Or as I always call it, New Mexico's burgeoning film industries.
That's right. Well, you know, when the Richardson administration started, there were 150 certified union film people in New Mexico, and now there's close to 4,000. So it's a tremendous success, I think, overall.
And so Robert Redford is very much a part of that. Ladies and gentlemen, the phones are quiet, so give us a call to support public radio, 428-1393, and cast your vote by calling both for KSFR and for the arts. So
in these economic times, it's time for the public to step up and demonstrate that they need to support what they're interested in. And KSFR Radio is an essential part of the Santa Fe cultural community.
Do you listen?
Oh, absolutely. Every morning on my way to work.
Really? And
actually, I shouldn't say that because I'm supposed to be at work at 8.
But you're listening to the Radio Cafe.
That's
Yay.
Right, so that's part of my job.
Excellent. Well, good. The numbers are 428-1393, 428-1393.
And I especially enjoy listening on Fridays when you have the comedian Robert Knott on.
The comedian, we mean journalist.
Yes.
Oh, thank you. We have mixed reviews about him, but I adore him, and most people do. Occasionally people say that he's sexist.
Oh, well, I don't know. I haven't really caught that.
I haven't either. I don't know what they're talking about. Let's talk about some of the artists, some of the other artists who are receiving Governor's Awards, Governor's Arts Awards. And another one, speaking of the film industry, is actor Wes Studi.
Well, of course, Wes is, we claim him as our own, but he's an international figure. You know, he's really done so many films. He's a great character actor, a great lead actor, and he's a Native American. Really a success story and an example to the whole Native community of what can happen. So, wonderful guy, great speaker, and it's timely that the governor has agreed to give him the award or accept the nomination.
And his latest role, Avatar.
That's right. Yeah, that's amazing that he was in that.
I know.
A blue-skinned Indian.
Exactly. Well, that's a movie. I mean, yeah, you know, popular movie with a bunch of Hollywood cliches in it, but I think it spoke to Indian people very strongly.
Absolutely. And, you know, his role in the Tony Hillerman series and all of his other roles. I mean, he's just he's one of those... like Hector Elizondo is for the Spanish community, the Hispanic community, that's what he is for the Native community. He's really a hero.
And so let's talk about some of the other people who are also, we've got some painters. Woody Gwynn.
Yeah, well, Woody Gwynn has been around for a long time, ever since I've been in New Mexico, over 30 years. And he really has developed this super realist style, you know, of highway overpasses and so on. That's what he's known for. But he's also got other very interesting areas that he's worked on where he's built up surfaces on the canvas and, you know, monumental size paintings that are just, you just want to step into them. And, you know, he's been quietly working in Galisteo. He bought a house there some years ago, and every now and then he comes out with a body of work and everybody's wowed by it.
Yeah. And another painter, Tom Noble.
Yeah, Tom, of course, you know, very colorful paintings in Taos. That whole modern school that started in Taos in the 20s, he's part of that tradition, in a sense. So it's great that he was picked and represents that community.
And another painter, Paul Shapiro.
Well, Shapiro is really one of the grand masters of abstract painting. You know, he's in that school of New Mexico painters like Gene Newman and Sam Scott, and he was also quietly working in a studio on the southeast side of town for years, and has just come out with a new body of work that is really world class. So we're happy to see that his name is on the list.
428-1393 is the number for the KSFR Fund Drive. And if you're listening, please give us a call. Just make a little contribution. But let's get the phones ringing because it's been quite quiet this morning. I know some people are tuning out for whatever reason. It's like, we've been going on in the Fund Drive for a while. But, you know, we do it because we need it. And we are here because you need us. So 428-1393 is the number. There's also traditional arts, and Arlene Cisneros is one of the, as they call them, santeras, which in New Mexico means a person who makes religious icon figures.
Yeah, Arlene is sort of the Michelangelo of the retablo painters in Santa Fe. And, you know, as you know, I was involved with the Spanish Colonial Art Society for many years.
Yeah.
And when Spanish Market comes around, if you're not there by 10 o'clock in the morning, you're not going to get an Arlene Cisneros cena because... she brings 40, 50 pieces, and people are clamoring to buy the work. It's meticulous, it's full of spirit, and really a very deserving artist.
And just plain beautiful.
Yeah,
those pieces
beautiful.
Are so sweet and beautiful, and keeping alive. It's nice to know that some aspects of New Mexico traditional culture are so alive and well.
That's true, and you know, with her work is so imbued with spirit that it comes through in the work, and I think that's what you feel when you look at it.
So we also have some folks who are contributors to the arts.
That's right. The Silvers, Marianne and Abe Silver, who, you know, have been involved with the museums in Santa Fe for
many years, at least. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're always there. Abe is a big player in the Rotary Club. Marianne has been involved with the Mansion Foundation for many years. They're just, you can always count on them to be there. I saw them last night at an event. You know, they're octogenarians, but you would never know it. You know, they're just always right there, helping financially, offering moral support. Good people.
428-1393. And then there's some groups that are found. One is a foundation.
Right, there's the Whited Foundation in Raton, and they support the arts and music in that area in Colfax County. And, you know, that area is quite rural, and to have somebody step up and provide support for the arts, you know, they did a whole redevelopment area down near the rail yard in Raton. There's art galleries there. The old train station is actually a community art center. And they were involved in that, and it's pretty wonderful to have them be recognized from that part of the state.
How are the arts doing outside of Santa Fe and Albuquerque here in New Mexico?
Well, you know, the production continues. The exhibits, you know, all over the state are still happening. I think if you talk to gallery owners, they'll tell you that they're suffering the same kind of economic downturn that the rest of the business world is enjoying.
Right.
I don't see many galleries closing. I think, you know, people are staying afloat. There's always an interest in art. Art inspires, and people need a painting on their wall. People need to go to a performance, and I think that's a good thing to see.
And who are the customers, for example, for paintings in the southern part of the state, in the far northern, eastern, western parts of the state? Are there people driving through? Are there?
I think that there are some people driving through, and there's also a lot of people who live there and collect art in Las Cruces, in Portales. There's also public art works all over the state through our New Mexico Arts Division. You know, the 1% program, whenever a state construction project is funded by the state, they have to use 1% to buy art.
Right.
And so all of those things continue and, you know, lead to what is our $3.3 billion industry.
That's huge, $3.3 billion industry.
Yeah, it's an amazing industry. We have, our survey shows that we have 60,000 people employed in arts and culture in New Mexico. And the $3.3 billion doesn't include the tourism impact. If you add that in, it goes over $6 billion because the rationale is that people come to New Mexico to look at art and buy art, and they stay in hotels, and they eat in restaurants, and they buy clothes. That's not included in the 3.3. The 3.3 basically is the salaries and the sales of art and crafts in New Mexico.
And that's... What are we now, the second or third art market in the nation?
Well, that's always debated, you know, but $3.3 billion is a big number.
That's a very big number.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when the New York gallery sells a painting for $100 million, that puts a dent in our $3.3 billion.
Right.
But nonetheless, there's lots of sales of Indian jewelry daily. On the Portal and the Palace of the Governors, all of those numbers add up to what we have here.
The number here in KSFR is 505-428-1393. And we're having a quiet morning, ladies and gentlemen, but it's important to tune in. It's important to please keep supporting our public radio station. We've done wonderfully so far on this show and in general on KSFR during our fun drive, and it's a pretty tight time for us, and so we're just asking everybody to reach in their pockets, dig in a little bit, and give us your loose change, maybe a couple months worth of loose change that you get when you buy a pack of gum or whatever. Whatever you do, you get change, and save some of that up and send it to KSFR, so maybe you can make a contribution of, you know, $10 or $20 or $50. Do it now, 428-1393, 428-1393. Let's not forget David Sheinbaum, who's that's a recipient right. of the Governor's Arts Award.
I was going to say, David, of course, is, you know, he and his wife Janet are anchors of the New Mexico photography community. And,
yeah.
You know, I came to New Mexico as a photographer in the 70s.
I didn't know that.
And it was because all the great photographers had either lived here or come through here. Minor White, Elliot Porter, Paul Caponegro, Walter Chappelle, William Clift, and of course the photo historian Beaumont Newhall, who
right.
David was his assistant for many years. And he's been teaching at now the Santa Fe University of Art and Design for the last 20 plus years, really developed the program there, helped to raise the money for the Marion Center. Really is a champion, not only for his own work, but for the photo community. He's published a number of books, has traveled the world, and sets out themes for himself. He did a book on the work of people in the world using stone, and traveled all over the world photographing, you know, in India and Tibet and places like that. It's really wonderful.
And we have so many treasures of people that we have here in New Mexico, here in Santa Fe. And not to forget the last one of the recipients is Working Classroom of Albuquerque.
Right, and of course they do the work of creating future artists by having working with the arts and other subjects with students in the classroom. And there are lots of organizations that are deserving, and this year they chose Working Classroom, which I think is a good thing.
And arts education being incredibly important and something that is definitely the first thing to go when people are looking at budgets.
Yes, art, music, and athletics really go down the tubes. And
yeah.
In essence, they're, from my perspective, of course, the most important.
Not to get on a whole entirely other subject, but the idea that children should not be allowed to run around during the day and that they could still learn if they don't run around during the day is so questionable. I don't know what to think of it.
True.
But especially, what was your arts education like?
Well, you know, I didn't really have a lot of formal education. When I was in college, I carried around a camera, and the people that published the poetry magazine were the ones that told me I was working, that I was making art, and I never really realized that. And then I, early on in college, that got me interested in other photographers' work, and that led to looking at painting and sculpture and so on. And I remember going to museums when I was in junior high school. I used to play hooky and go to the Brooklyn Museum, and I was fascinated by the art of Africa and Oceania, and really that led to my later work in sculpture. My mother was kind of a poetic lady. My father played the cello for a while, and I had some training in music, so I was kind of always leaning towards the arts, but never really thought of it as a life's work, you know, until I really got immersed in it. And then really my career evolved into museum work and arts administration. I find that as satisfying, and I could bring my creative energies into that.
We're talking to Stuart Ashman, the Cabinet Secretary for the Department of Cultural Affairs here in New Mexico. And you have been with the Department of Cultural Affairs for 7 years.
That's right.
Almost the entirety of the Richardson administration.
That's right. I just celebrated 7 years earlier this month. So, and I'm actually the first cabinet secretary for the department since the legislature voted it to be a cabinet-level department after Governor Richardson issued an executive order. So I'm the longest-standing agency director since the agency started in the 1970s.
And what happens next? We're going to have a change of administration. We're going to have either a Democratic or Republican governor in just a few months.
Well, of course, there's a lot of implications for the state in that change. And we'll have to wait and see what the new governor decides. There's always a when there's a change in government, there's usually a change in cabinet. Some people get held over and others don't. I have no sense of my future in it. I am prepared to work with whoever gets named to create a smooth transition. We have held the budget together so that they have 6 months of the budget beginning in January. Everything is in order. We keep a very tidy administration in my department thanks to my great staff. And so we're ready to go either way. I think there's a lot of excitement in the arts in New Mexico, in culture in New Mexico, the museums, the state library, all of the agencies that we run under the department. And I'm looking forward to whatever happens.
428-1393, and we've got a report from the control room.
Hi there. You know, Dorothy Massey called and from Collected Works, and just obviously is one of your devoted fans, Mary Charlotte.
As we are hers.
Along with Heidi Lowen, who absolutely loves you and thinks you're the most inspirational person on the radio.
Thank you, Heidi. And thanks to both of you. And Dorothy, as I'm noticing here, wants to make sure that we don't forget the literary arts. Is that part of the cultural affairs?
Yes. You know, we have we work with a literacy group. We funnel money to them to run programs through the state and public libraries. And of course, we have a major literary center at the National Hispanic Cultural Center that holds a Latino conference every year.
Right.
And we have a publishing house, the Museum of New Mexico Press. So we're involved in that as well. It's not all about painting and sculpture, of course.
Right. This year happens to be somewhat focused that way. But you were recently, Stuart Ashman, at the, is it over now, the Governor's Conference?
The Board of Governors Conference.
The Board of
yes,
Governors
it
Conference.
Was on Sunday. A piece of it was on Sunday, and some of it was on Monday. A bulk of it was on Monday, and it was...
What's the nature of that conference?
Well, it was the conversations between the border governors of Mexico and the United States. Unfortunately, because of the Arizona bill, there was some problem getting some of the other governors here, the U.S. governors here. And Governor Richardson was the U.S. governor representing the U.S. side, and the lieutenant governor from California, Abel Maldonado. Arnold Schwarzenegger was going to come, but Governor Schwarzenegger was on a trip to China and came back sick.
Ah.
So, too much lo mein, I guess.
Something.
They had some very interesting discussions, panel presentations. They signed a joint statement of cooperation between all the governors. And I think, you know, one of the things that came to light for me personally, I was charged with caring for the Deputy Attorney General of Mexico and his aide, who is the ATF liaison in Phoenix. And one of the problems that, the biggest problem that they see, besides the drug problem, of course, and the illegal migration, is... the flow of weapons from the United States to Mexico. And
is that where the cartels are getting all their weapons?
That's right, yes. They buy everything, and you know, it's sort of like a prohibition economy where only the people involved in the crime are enriching themselves. And of course in Mexico it's a huge problem. There are assassinations of political candidates, government officials. They're very well organized there, and it's hurting Mexico in a lot of different ways.
And so from Mexico's point of view, stanching the flow of weapons from north to south is every bit as important as stanching the flow of drugs from south to north.
Right. The other thing is that the production of drugs in Mexico is obviously serving a demand, and that demand comes from the United States and Europe.
Right.
85% of the drugs that are produced in Mexico are exported, 45% to the United States and 40% to Europe. So really, they only use 15% of what they produce, and they export the rest. And of course, I don't know what the numbers are, but it's huge numbers of dollars if they can actually outfit armies down there. And you know, the same is true in other countries, Colombia, Peru, and so on. But they don't have a border with the United States, so it's a little more difficult to smuggle.
And they've got, Mexico has very strong gun laws.
They have absolutely very strong gun laws. And when I was talking to Carlos Luque, the ATA liaison from the Attorney General's office in Mexico, he argues that, you know, they also have something similar to the Second Amendment, but there are regulations beyond that. So if you purchase a weapon, it's your responsibility. So if a crime is committed with that weapon, they're coming to you.
Right.
So you can't just deal in weapons. You can't pass it on or so on. And also the purchase of ammunition is highly controlled. They have all kinds of regulations for guns there. And, of course, that's a controversial issue in this country because sportsmen want to have guns. And sportsmen are not criminals, obviously. It's how do you allow sportsmen to have what they need while at the same time making sure that people that shouldn't have guns don't have them.
So what came of that conference? In other words, do you feel like anything positive was achieved? Did various sides learn things they didn't know before and so on?
Yes, I think the whole thing was very positive. And, you know, the fact that Carlos Pascual who is the U.S. ambassador to Mexico was there, and the Mexican ambassador to the U.S. was there as well, means that the federal governments of both countries were represented, or both state departments were represented. So the messages will be taken back, and there is an agreement, I'm sure that it's available for anybody that wants to read it, that explains what the steps in the cooperative agreement will be. I would say the whole thing was positive, you know, the fact that they got together and discussed all these issues.
Now, was Arizona represented in any way?
No, Arizona and Texas were not represented.
They didn't want to show up?
No, they didn't show up because originally when the conference was being held in Arizona, the Mexican governors boycotted it. So actually it was Governor Richardson that rescued the conference because it would not have been right to not have the conference, you know. But I have to say that the people that put the conference together did it in a very short period of time, and it was very professional. He carried on. Everything was on schedule. It's really pretty amazing. And the amount of press and security that were there was overwhelming. I don't know if you saw, but they closed Johnson Street, San Francisco Street, part of Grant Street. They had the bomb squad there. It was a great exercise for all the law enforcement people.
Right.
Because these people are at risk. You know, these drug cartels, that would have been an opportunity for them.
Right. Yeah. Not an enviable time to be a public figure in Mexico.
Absolutely.
We're talking to Stuart Ashman, and it's just about time to go. But...
You know, let me just say, on the Governor's Awards, the event starts at 3:30 in the Governor's Gallery, and that's free and open to the public, as is the ceremony at 5:15 at the New Mexico Museum of Art. However, because we have 10 awardees and
they all have family and friends.
Family and friends, and some of them are big celebrities. We expect a lot of people, and the fire marshal only allows us to have 450 people in that auditorium. So you have to have a ticket to come to the St. Francis Auditorium.
Oh, okay.
And you can get that ticket by calling Virginia Castellano at the New Mexico Arts Division. The number is 827-6490. 827-6490, Virginia. Ask for tickets for the ceremony for the Governor's Awards on Friday, September 24th. Because they won't let anybody in without a ticket.
Right. Well, that's very good to know, 827-6490. And our number is 505-428-1393, 428-1393. And any closing words about the importance of public radio?
Well, public radio, especially KSFR, really inspire people. It's a great way to start your day. You get informed, you hear the BBC, and you hear Mary Charlotte. And let me just say one thing. The Governor's Awards staff are incredible. Doug Svetnikov, Virginia Castellano, Lee Witt from the Office of the First Lady, and, of course, Jill Mamadeh Gray. They put it all together, and Martha Landry at the New Mexico Museum of Art. They're just fabulous.
Excellent. Well, wonderful people in the administration here in New Mexico, and especially in the Department of Cultural Affairs and in the arts in general. Stuart Ashman is the Cabinet Secretary for Cultural Affairs for the state of New Mexico. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to take a break right now, and Denise McCluggage, race car driver, will be with us in just a moment. Please stay tuned, and while we are hearing from our beloved underwriters, please give us a call, 505-428-1393. And we are back in the Santa Fe Baking Company, the Santa Fe Radio Cafe, and I'd like to welcome Denise McCluggage. She is a race car driver, I suppose if we would say former race car driver, journalist, author, photographer. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Oh, boy, I have reason to be tired, don't I?
Well, you've had an amazing career, and we're here partly to talk about the Santa Fe Concorso, which is an event happening in Santa Fe this coming weekend, and we're actually going to be giving away three pairs of tickets during this last 20 minutes of the program, and only during this last 20 minutes of the program, if you make a contribution of $100 to KSFR 428-1393. What is the Concorso?
Well, Concorso is the Spanish and or Italian word for concours, which is a French word for, I guess, beauty show for cars.
A beauty show for cars. I love it. And so you're going to be showing all kinds of cars. Are these cars specifically New Mexico-based in some way?
No, some of them are. Many are. But there are a number from some really well-known collections across the country, including Ralph Lauren, who, of course, everyone knows is a fashion designer. But he carries that taste and impeccability into his car collection. He has one of the most outstanding car collections in the world, and he is sending one of his cars.
Now, when you have a car collection, is it like having an art collection where, I mean, some people collect early 20th century modernism and so on?
Well, it can be. The major difference is you don't hang them on the wall, and cars need attention and care. And they have to be exercised. They're more like animals than they are like paintings. But
I mean, do they specialize in certain times, in certain kinds of cars?
They can. There are different eras in the collection. Some are more popular at certain times than at others. Right now, we're just coming kind of out of a muscle car sort of phase people have, because it seems to me it's always what was the in car when you were in high school. And then as people age and get more money, and then they go tracking down what was the hip car for when they were young.
Because why? That was the formative time in their life?
Yes, and that's what was the key to popularity and nirvana, you know. And, and so they... Now I have the money to enter Nirvana, so they look for that car that they didn't have, but the most popular guy in high school had or something. But there are even some old, what they call brass cars, which are the old, very upright, huge, big things with brass headlights and brass trim and all of that from the teen years and the... early on, very early, because, you know, cars are only a little over 100 years old.
Right.
And that's why now car shows are just blossoming everywhere, and they're all different degrees. If you drive across the country on a Sunday afternoon in the summer particularly, every damn small town has a little bug in the main street is blocked with shiny, shiny cars that are parked along the side, and they can be anything from, you know, hot rods, or I've seen restored taxi cabs in one town that was specialized in. It was great. It was it's things you happen on. This is a little different than that. This is a little more upscale, And it's not free. The tickets are $45 general admission. And however, the site of this particular show, it's up in a horse ranch called La Mesita, which is just up north of Buffalo Thunder, the resort on the Pewaukee Pueblo.
Right.
And it's a lovely, beautiful place, wonderful old buildings. And the horses and are still there. I mean, they are there again. And so they're part of the show, indeed. So they're multi-horsepower, and then the horses peering out of their...
two different kinds of horsepower.
Yes, indeed. And we're going to have a riding or a dressage or jumping or whatever, and a young woman will be doing that in the afternoon in the arena, just to have something else somebody can look at. Actually, it's sort of part of one of the themes we are having, which is then and now. We have some cars from, for instance, a Rolls-Royce Silver Ghost from the 20s. And now we have a 2011 Rolls-Royce Ghost, brand new and very rare still. And I had to promise everything to get that car here. Actually, it was great. They were showing it to the press out at the Pebble Beach area. And I said, we need one of those in Santa Fe on Sunday, September, whichever it is, 26, I hope. And they said, oh, no, they're none available. And I said, well, what about these? Where do these go? They have to go somewhere. Well, they were going back to New Jersey. And then I said, Santa Fe's
on
the
way.
Yes. So I finally talked to the right person, and so we got a 2011 Ghost. And we have a 1950s Mercedes Gullwing and a brand-new AMG Gullwing Mercedes. So that's part of the then and now. There are a number of other cars. But our star guest is Sir Stirling Moss, who
yes.
is known as one of the greatest racing car drivers ever. But he got his start as an equestrian as a child. He and his sister showed horses in England. And so I thought, great, you know, we'll have equestrians to begin with here.
428-1393 is the number. 428-1393. And we've got a couple of thank yous.
Yes, actually, someone had called, I think that was an Anonima, and she wanted to really thank you for your interview with Stuart Ashman. I thought that was great. And Charlie Romney Brown of Women's Voices has called once again. They're a big supporter of you, Mary Charlotte. Think you're absolutely wonderful.
Thank you so much, Charlie Romney Brown, and thank you all for calling. And tickets to the Santa Fe Concorso, you know, each ticket is worth $45, and so if you make a gift of $100 to KSFR, you'll get a pair of tickets for virtually the price that you would be paying anyway. So we've got three and only three pairs of tickets, so please call now, 428-1393, 428-1393. Denise McCluggage, that was interesting what you just said a moment ago. Is there some continuity between riding horses and driving cars?
Yeah, oddly enough, anything that requires a sense of balance and a sense of spatial relationships relates to driving. Skiing and sailing are two things that very much have carryovers. Weight transfer, all of this kind of thing. And after all, what is dressage but very, very subtle weight transfer on a horse? And that being able to sense those differences and similarities would be very important in driving as well as in horsemanship.
I haven't thought all that much in my life about race car driving because it hasn't been a sport that I've followed, but is it... I mean, in what way is it an athletic sport in some way? I mean, do you have to be an athlete to be a driver?
Well, yes, really. It's particularly now, so many G-forces are operating in the very fast cars. And you need a physical training to resist the G's, to be able to cope with them without blacking out, which would be unfortunate at speed.
Indeed.
And people now work out a lot more and have, you know, nutritionists and trainers, and just like any other sport, much more so than they used to. It was when I was driving, nobody paid an awful lot of attention to that. You just went with your native abilities, more or less. But and we didn't take care of ourselves. I didn't wear earplugs, for instance, and so anywhere between 4,500, 8,000 revs, I don't hear much anymore because I didn't wear these earplugs with all the racing engines. Now people are much more careful, one hopes.
Now, how did you start? I mean, as a woman, it was unusual, and to some extent still is, for a woman to be a race car driver. How did you get into it?
I was a journalist, and I liked to do what interested me, and what I wrote about, I did. And so I did some things that might have seemed odd to people, but they were interesting experiences and something to write about. And I really, really liked racing. I wrote about skiing. I wrote a book about skiing, indeed, and covered skiing for the New York Herald Tribune when it was in existence, and then also said I wanted to cover this new sport of sports car racing. And since I tended to do what I wrote about, then I started driving as well. Then I jumped out of an airplane with a parachute, of course, no fool I. But it was a fun thing to do, you know. I mean, what was this like? What experience? Who would want to jump out of an airplane when it has perfectly good, you know, it's going to land anyhow? So, and so I got involved with that.
These are all sort of thrill-seeker kinds of sports, if you want to think about it that way.
Well, there are more, perhaps more intense experiences, or more obvious, maybe, less subtle variations on experiences. But I also, I got involved with the inner self as well, with
like
mind
the Zen
games
aspects of
well, like neuro-linguistic programming and so forth. And I was curious about consciousness and experience, interior as well as exterior.
Very interesting. We're talking to Denise McCluggage, and the Santa Fe Concorso is happening this weekend. Now, let's go back to the people who are going to show up. We have Sir Sterling Moss, and if this is correct, we also have Al Unser.
Yeah, Al Unser is coming up. He's got a museum of his race cars and things down near Albuquerque. And he's going to be a judge as well. So that'll be great because it's a completely different sort of racing than what Sterling did, or I did, in a way. But there are similarities, and the racing drivers tend to respect each other's specialties and are interested in them, indeed. Oddly enough, Sir Sterling's father, Alfred Moss, who was a dentist, another sidebar, dentists are somehow more involved in racing and cars than anybody else. It's amazing.
That's
than any other specialty like that. And I had a dentist in San Francisco that had nothing but road, track, and car and driver in his mind.
I wonder why that is.
I don't know.
I've got to ask.
I've got to ask Sterling about that. But
they have time and money.
Yeah. Maybe. Well, Dr. Dickie Thompson, Tony Brooks, a very famous English driver, was a dentist. I mean, it's amazing.
Interesting.
But Sterling's dad actually raced at Indianapolis in the, when was it? Must have been the 20s sometime. I can't remember the date. But he did finish 14th. So he did something that his son never did. Sterling never raced at Indy, but he raced everywhere.
Now, what was your specialty, Denise McCluggage, in race car driving?
I drove any given car, emphasis on given. But I drove for Briggs Cunningham. I drove for the Porsche. I was supposed to drive at at Le Mans for Porsche and for Briggs and for Luigi Canetti and the NART team. But they wouldn't let women drive at Le Mans then. So that was, you know, it was unfortunate. I was deprived of a lot of things that I'd like to have done, but I kind of shrugged it off then with the idea that, well, maybe they're protecting me from myself. Who knows? You know?
Well, I mean, sexism, I mean, you were one of the women who really pioneered the next generation, who is able to do the things, some of the things you weren't allowed to do.
Well, it's to a degree that's true, but I had this kind of weird superstition that, you know, here I would be trying to get a race into a race. Can you imagine? Trying very hard, okay, doing everything to make them accept me and let me drive at Le Mans. And there I am going down the Mulsanne straight, and the brakes fail. And I think, oh, my God, I didn't have to be here. So when things went against me, I thought, well, there'll be something else. So,
have you ever been in that situation where the brakes failed when you were in a race?
Yeah, well, I drove a Ferrari Berlin at Sebring. Drove a couple of Ferraris there, but I drove my own in 1961. And it's a 12-hour race in Florida. And at that time, the brakes didn't tend to last for 12 hours. So my last 2.5 hours were without brakes. It was amazing. Here I was at night with no brakes, and my times were faster than it had been in the daytime with everything. I thought, what do I know now that I didn't know then? How can I learn and apply them? But it was... You make do.
What do you do when you're driving and there's no brakes?
Well, you slow down earlier for the corners. You drive. You scrub off speed by getting a little sideways, perhaps. You gear down, and so that you are going around really slow corners without bothering to brake. But you have started slowing down enough, and you step down through the gears so that you can make the turn that way. It's amazing what you can do without things.
428-1393. We still have tickets available for the Santa Fe Concorso, which is happening this weekend. Now, Sunday is the big day, right? That's
Sunday,
the day we're giving away the tickets
Sunday
for.
Is the day of the show. People come in on Friday night, and on Saturday, they're going to be driving up toward on the high road to Taos, I think, part of the way. So if people are along the highway and see a bunch of great old cars, that's what it is. It's part of the Concorso. And it's a way you can glimpse the cars the way they're meant to be seen, in motion, on a lovely road with the beautiful scenery behind them. And it's a nice tradition. It started at Pebble Beach about 10, 15 years ago. They started having a tour, the cars driving, actually, because everybody was saying, oh, these are over-restored trailer queens. They just put on a trailer and hauled somewhere and then shown off, but this showed that these cars, whatever their age, were capable of driving on the hills around Monterey in California. And it's a chance for people to see them for nothing, for one thing, and also as they were meant to be seen. A Pebble Beach, it's $200 to get into Pebble Beach to
right.
see the car. So it's... $45 is a very small amount, really. But we have a smaller show, and from a lot of local people too, as well as these. We've got a wonderful Delahaye coming from the Peter Mullen Museum, which is a new museum for primarily French cars, particularly the ones between the wars, which have incredible. I'm really, really love French coachwork. It's so imaginative and so swoopy and great and so very French.
And it sounds like French art.
Yes. Oh, yes. It's quite... It's amazing how the cars so represent the culture of the country they're from.
Well, it's almost time to go. We're talking to Denise McCluggage about the Santa Fe Concorso and about race car driving. I'm just going to let people know one more time. They can get tickets by calling 505-428-1393, 505-428-1393, and score a pair of tickets to the Concorso. It sounds like it's going to be really an amazing event. I guess there's a lot of car lovers in New Mexico. And New Mexico, I remember when I moved here 20 years ago, I was looking at everybody's cars and I saw all these, just driving around, all these old cars with no rust on them. And I thought, what a great place to have a car.
Yeah.
And to buy an old car.
Oh, yeah. And pickup trucks particularly. There's some glorious pickups. And
before we go, we only have really a minute and a half left.
Okay.
But if you can say it quickly, what are the qualities that it takes to be a good race car driver?
It varies really, but generally a sense of balance, and which means a good inner ear when it comes down to that.
Yeah.
And it's really more in the wanting to do it.
Right.
Because the appreciation of it and the feeling for it. And it is a remarkable sensation to go really fast legally.
Denise McCluggage is a former race car driver, journalist, author, photographer, and really pioneer for women in this industry. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
And we'll see you at the Santa Fe Concorso this Sunday.
Yes, you get there by going to Buffalo Thunder.
And you can also look at santafeconcorso.com. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org and podcasting at santaferadiocafe.org, thanks to Dot Foil Computer Services. We're at facebook.com/radiocafe. My email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. And once again, the number for the fun drive and for these tickets to the Concorso is 505-428-1393. Thank you so much, everybody, for supporting KSFR and for listening to KSFR. And we'll see you tomorrow. Hasta la vista. Ciao.